This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to episode 206 of the Stacey West podcast. In a change to your expected schedule, I am once again your host and my name is Gary, and this week I am joined by the same person I was last week, and his name is Chris. How are you doing?
Very well. Hello everybody.
So first of all, we must say Ben is having a bit of a tough week at the moment. So it's me and Chris. So obviously the two of us, and hopefully everybody listening, send all their best to Ben and Rachel and hope that things pick up for them soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but you asked if I'm well. I'm in the doghouse, Chris.
Metaphorically or kind of, in reality in a way?
Semi-literally. Yeah. So, Fee had the day off today and she wanted to get things done for the wedding and all that sort of stuff, but she couldn't because she had to take the dog to the groomers, and so she drove. It's a 45 minute round trip, so she drove 20-25 minutes to the groomers, sitting outside for 20 minutes wondering why he wasn't coming out. Went and knocked on the door and he went, "It's tomorrow, love." And she's come home and I've written 2:40 on the 23rd on the calendar, and it's actually 2:30 on the 24th.
Some would say that's a schoolboy error.
Yeah, it is. I've done it before, because the way that the calendar is kind of printed, I have a little bit of an issue with which day's which on there.
Oh dear. I don't think I've ever done anything like that. The worst one for me was just when you get the time wrong when the clocks change.
No, I never do that.
Yeah, turned up an hour early once for an away game. It was me away at Darlington, seems to ring a bell. So it was an early start anyway. And then me and my old man rocked up at the Central Bank car park at like 5 a.m. and we weren't meant to meet until 6 or something. I think that's the only time we've done that. I've also had a challenging day, though, if it makes you feel any better. So I was due to deliver a face-to-face group session, as I do most days of the week. Turned up, laptop died. And not died as in the battery just went flat, as in wouldn't turn back on. That was a challenge when you had 20 people in front of you wanting you to talk through an hour and a half presentation in a lovely, brilliant, interactive, exciting way, and you can't do it properly. So that was fun. But we're here now, and I've got a laptop, which is my personal laptop, which works and is on right now, so we're all good now.
Well, I've actually been wasting my time this week doing AI-generated art.
I've noticed.
Yeah, I'm doing it a lot. So I won't be able, listeners won't be able to see it, but I've literally just been, I've actually subscribed to it now. That's how bad. So look, I've managed to do my dog as James Bond in front of an Aston Martin in a tuxedo.
Thing is, that's genuinely excellent. Look at that.
I've actually done a series of 9 of my dog as different things and put them on fridge magnets and ordered them. So we've got like Charlie as Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones and whatever, as Darth Vader. I did him as the antagonist of a horror movie, and he's kind of sitting at Camp Crystal Lake in blue overalls looking sad. But yeah, I'm kind of hooked on it, and I subscribe to it. It's like $10 a month, and I've subscribed to it. And I'm just sitting there going, oh, I wonder what it'd look like if I could have a dragon, but in a pint glass on a bar in a pub, and like, it's a normal pub. And then I type it in and it comes up and I'll go, yeah, it looks shit. Let's do something else. So I tried to do
one in every how many attempts comes out as a decent one? How many yeah. does it take?
Well, no, some of them are brilliant. It doesn't take that many on this mid journey. And it was my boss's 40th this week. Happy birthday, Ash. I know you don't listen, but there we go. But I didn't know it was his 40th, so I missed it. So he came in on Wednesday and like, oh, you're in bad books. You forgot my birthday. It's like, I'll do you an AI-generated art picture of you two dogs looking like crime fighters standing in a field. And he's like, yeah, all right, then.
Yeah, deal.
Yeah, deal. And so, that's what he's done. So, yeah, I'm hooked on it. I'm putting the players on. I've got another player lined up ready for the morning. Those kind of things, you know, obviously I did Matt Reed and Peter Gain, so I have got another one. I'm steering clear of making Joe Walsh out of glass, though. That's the only thing I'm going to say, because it could be.
Poor lad. I didn't notice Peter Gain. I didn't get a chance to read any of the comments. So I was just in the couple of minutes at lunch break, I've scrolled. The Reedy one was obvious. It was excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then was it today's or yesterday's that clearly is Peter Gain, but I didn't realise who it was. I couldn't work it out, that one.
It was this morning, yeah. I'd basically done him as a wizard at Hogwarts
because
I thought he was a wizard. So, and it does, they sometimes they look like him and sometimes they don't. Like the Ethan Arahan one is Braveheart last week was like, wow, it actually looks like Ethan Arahan. And then I did one with Mark Bailey and it's like, wow, it looks like Jason Statham with an extra arm. So, so anyway, the irreverent banter is staving off us having to talk about Peterborough. So last week we did small wins. Mm-hmm. Which went down quite well. Didn't have very many emailed to us, so people obviously didn't want to or didn't kind of reply. So people obviously don't have that many small wins of their own. But I think somebody last week said Desert Island film and music. Now, just picking your favourite is sad, or is easy. So we thought we'd do today Guilty Pleasure. So a Guilty Pleasure song and a Guilty Pleasure movie. But you're a maverick and you're going off script with the movie, aren't you?
Well, yeah, because I don't think I've got a Guilty Pleasure of a movie. I was thinking really hard about this, and I kind of like the films I like, but I think they're all good films. But there's one that I don't like, which everyone else I've ever spoken seems to think was brilliant. So I thought that's as best as I could get. So it's an unpopular opinion rather than a guilty pleasure, and it is the new the most recent Mad Max film, which my mates raved about, thought it was fantastic, went to the cinema to watch it, and I thought it was absolutely shite.
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, it was. He won an Oscar for that. He didn't say anything.
It was guff.
Oh, I'm so pleased you thought that, because I thought it was shit. And everyone I went with, literally walked out of that cinema. I was fully expected to have a conversation about how terrible it was. And they thought, oh, wasn't it brilliant? I was like, no. They literally went away and came back again. That was the plot. That was all that happened. So my popular opinion from a film is that. And I couldn't think of a guilty pleasure for a film, but I've got a couple of songs. But you go first for your film.
I have got a guilty pleasure for a film, and it's a guilty pleasure film, but then it might even go into being a guilty pleasure actor as well. I love Dirty Dancing.
Oh, God.
I think Dirty Dancing is one of the best films ever made. It is just absolutely phenomenal.
Please stop.
I'm getting goosebumps, man. Nobody puts baby in a corner. No, do you know what? I love Dirty Dancing. I know why. Because I loved Patrick Swayze. My mum was a Patrick Swayze fan. She liked him for different reasons to me, because she liked him as a 35, 40-year-old woman. And I liked him as, like, he's in Roadhouse kicking people's asses. So I loved Roadhouse. I loved Ghost. Patrick Swayze, anything with him in. But Dirty Dancing, it came on the other week. He's like, oh, you'll not want to watch this, will you? And it's like, fuck off. Get the popcorn. Feet up. Yeah, you know, let's watch that bit again where he picks her up and, yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
Oh, my.
He was the epitome.
I was not expecting that.
Really?
I don't know what I was expecting, but it definitely wasn't that.
Yeah. I don't care what people say. So go on, a guilty pleasure song then. What song you got as guilty pleasure?
This probably rivals your Dirty Dancing, to be honest. So this is Every Time We Touch by Cascada.
I don't even know what that is.
Because every time we touch, I get this feeling.
Still don't.
Wow. Okay. It's not a great song. I appreciate most people won't like it. The reason I like it, though, is I always quite secretly liked it anyway when it first came out, which was what, probably 20 years ago now. And then when I was learning guitar, it had easy chords.
Yeah.
So it was one of the kind of my go-to songs when I was just kind of learning, and it's just stuck. And it's honestly, whenever I pick the guitar up, it's literally the first song I play, just as like a warm-up every single time. So yeah, that's me. That is the man who prides himself on liking music that's got guitars in it and means something. You know, like proper lyrics and proper musicianship. I also like a pretty meaningless song, trance song from the early noughties.
Yeah, you see, there are meaningless trance songs from the early noughties I really like. Do you remember a song called Rapture by Io?
Yes, I see. I quite like that too, actually.
And
it's not a thing, that's not a guilty pleasure, though.
No, no, it's
Resurrection
not.
By PPK.
PPK.
I quite like that because it doesn't mean anything, but it's just catchy. It's decent. It's harmless, isn't it?
I used to like them because I used to be smashed in a club and they'd come on and you'd be like, you'd get, whoa. It's that thing on Peep Show, isn't it? Where they're on the dance floor. He's bringing it up. He's bringing it up. He's taking it down. Yeah. Oh, so my guilty pleasure is more of a genre, but I will pick a particular song as well if I have to.
You do have to.
It's country and western.
Okay, fair enough.
I love country and western. And I'm not just talking about like cool country and western, like Johnny Cash. Johnny Cash is cool. Everybody knows Johnny Cash is cool. You're allowed to like Johnny Cash songs. But if you start going and saying, I quite like Billy Joe Spears, Harper Valley PTA, and you know, Dolly Parton, Jolene. Have you heard the Slow Down Jolene as well?
Jolene is one of my favourite songs. Again, it's one of the early ones I started learning on guitar, so you kind of get to know it. But I've always liked Jolene. And I've got like 1,000 different covers of it on my Spotify. It's great.
It's a great song. It's a great song. And there's one that it was slowed down. It was slowed down to however many beats per minute or whatever. Hmm. Yeah, and it's a good song. Yeah, I mean, I've got loads of other guilty pleasure songs, like when I'm in a car and something comes on. There's a song as well, and it's more guilty than a pleasure, but it's No Survivor by Nick Helm, because it gets...
Oh, what's brilliant!
But Fee hates it. It gets in her head. And we were sitting earlier at lunch and we were trying to work out songs for the registry office. So what songs are we going to play while people are coming in and all that sort of stuff? And I went, oh, here's one. Clicked on it. No Survivor. Yeah, I do like that.
You know what? So many are coming into my head now. I like Scooter.
Oh, well, we play it, don't we? In the pool room. It's on the jukebox in the pool room.
Yes, please.
I like, what is it? Bob Jumping All Over the World or whatever. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. So just to wrap this section up, I think we got some from Ben, didn't we? Let me have a quick look. So Ben likes Mean Girls for the movie It's Just Funny. And he likes Toxic by Britney. Don't care what anyone says. It's an absolute banger. Plus, I had to dissect it in an early music production assignment at uni, and it's basically flawless, is what he says. About Britney Spears.
Todd, what we say about football in the next 45 minutes to an hour. What we really want to know is whether Toxic by Britney Spears is flawless or not.
Yeah. So tweet us, is it flawless, Toxic by Britney Spears, or would you prefer to listen to King of the Road? Because that's another one of mine. You know that? Midnight, King of the Road.
Oh, that was an advert once upon a time, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't think how it goes now. I was singing it earlier and now I can't think how it bloody goes. Because I know all of the children, all of their names. They like when they... Yeah, anyway, there we go. Right, should we talk about some football? We're 30 minutes in. People are going to be listening and going, we don't want to listen to Gary and Chris tell us what shit songs they like.
No, but they might not also want to listen to us talk about Bieber either.
No, granted. But they're going to have to.
They are going to have to. So let's go.
Go, yeah. I tell you what, I did a dog walk on it. So let me get just a little bit from you. I've picked up some stats and some bits and bobs to have a look at. But what were your impressions of it?
Well, I haven't got any stats to go off. I haven't had a chance to see any this time. People may be surprised to know. Though on Sunday, one of the officials at our football match said to me after the game that he enjoyed the pod. So thank you very much for that. But also that he wants less talk of XG. So you'll be pleased to know today I haven't seen it. So I can't say anything to...
Which official was it?
I don't want to say, because I don't know if he'll want to be shouted out.
But because I knew one of the linesmen was Alfie Stimpson, who was my friend Paul Stimpson's son.
Oh, it was the other liner.
Okay, there we go. I didn't know who that was. So, yeah, that's cool. Okay. Let's talk anyway, NXT. Well, hello to the other Lino. There we go. Hello. You did a good job.
Yes, you did. Thank you. Anyway, it was an interesting game. It wasn't actually. No, I was going to say it was an interesting game, kind of in terms of analysis, but it probably wasn't interesting to watch. I felt that we allowed Peterborough to dominate it at times. Personally, I felt Peterborough were good once they were given the opportunity to be. They were better than I thought they were going to be, if I'm honest, when they had the ball. I think they moved the ball pretty quickly with intensity relatively well. Didn't create a huge number of really clear-cut chances, but they took the ones that they had. But I know, obviously, we're a pressing side. We all know that we're good at pressing, so we allow them to have the ball deep and we want to win the ball back in high areas. That's how we play. It's how we've played most of the season. I don't feel like we pressed particularly effectively. And once they played through us once or twice, we then stopped trying to do that because they had chances off the back of it, which became quite stodgy. It meant they dominated possession. It meant that we were very much playing on the counter-attack without any real cohesion. And yeah, I thought it was a poor performance from us in the end, to be honest. And whether, you know, as soon as they scored their second goal, it was game over. The third one didn't really change anything for me. First half was poor. We were better second half after the shape change and till they scored their second, and then it was game over.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the stats tell a slightly different story.
Yeah,
to how the game actually was. Peterborough United were not as good as the scoreline suggested. I don't think there's any doubt whatsoever about that. Because
I don't think that it was a 3-0 game, but I think if it finished, definitely a win to Peterborough to nil. Was the correct result.
Yeah, it was. It was the correct result. XG suggests 1-0 was the correct result. Their XG was 0.84. So the chances that they scored, you know, they scored three goals from where they should have scored one. Our XG was 0.22. And for me, that's 0.22 too high because we were poor. We had more shots than Peterborough. 9 shots to their 8. We had 1 on target. They had 4. They had 4 shots on target, scored 3. They weren't that good. They weren't pouring all over us. They weren't they were clinical, but they weren't as comprehensive in their performance as it suggests. We delivered more crosses into the box, 13 compared to their 8, but only 2 of ours landed. To be fair, only 2 of theirs landed as well. They were just, for me, they were a good side in the final third. They didn't need to be a good side in their defensive third at all because we offered nothing whatsoever. We were like a boxer with a paper mache hand. Like as soon as we'd lashed out, it just crumbled and that was it. And that's why I think I'm pissed off because we've won and drawn games against much better teams.
Yeah, that was it. It was, for me, it had a big game feel before the game, like the other big games that we've had. But the performance was off that compared to what we was expecting, I think. I thought Peterborough were just better than us in both boxes, certainly in our box. Like you said, we didn't have too many opportunities to really test them in theirs, but what we did put in, they dealt with. I just think they were, like, clinical is the right word. But, you know, and I will talk about XG because teams, XG is a guide, but good teams overperform it. So good strikers, good attackers will score more goals than they actually suggest because they are of a higher quality than their peers in their division. That's kind of how you, that's a good indicator of a team or a player that's better than the level or worse, of course. And they were good in the box. They took their chances well. Johnson Clark Karras, you know, we said we weren't too worried about him on the pod last week. You know, like, he was brilliant. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah, he was, and he took his goals well.
Fair play. Like, I was wrong to dismiss him, really, you know, because we said a lot of his goals are penalties. He's just a finisher, but he was, hell, if you've got someone that puts the ball in the net as frequently as he does, you're going to score goals. And yeah, I, like I said, you can't complain at the result. But I'm disappointed at our performance because I felt in the fewer times that we did really try and take the game too posh, we didn't create anything clear cut, but that looked like there was chances there for us. And especially in their first few minutes, their second half, I felt like, yeah, we've got a game now, but we just didn't do it anywhere near as often as we should have.
So a couple of bits that I picked up. First of all, Paddy O'Connor has got the Man of the Match award on the Stacey West player ratings, 6.1. So it's, you know, best of a bad bunch, along with Carl Rushworth. Paddy O'Connor won fewer than 50% of his defensive duels. I think he won 40% of his aerial duels, which is really low for him. Mm-hmm. He actually didn't have a good game at all. Only one defender won more than 50% of their aerial duels, and he's got 4.7 at the moment rating, and that's Sean Rowan. And I think that's really interesting because I didn't think Rowan particularly stood out, but actually he was probably the best of a bad bunch across the back. And when I say a bad bunch, it wasn't like we were calamitous.
It was different to last season. Because if we'd lost 3-0 to Peterborough last season, I think we could all envisage, even if you just saw the score, you didn't see the game, you can envisage how that happened. You can envisage us being soft and being weak and being open and being easy to play through. I don't think we were. I don't feel, like you said, the stats maybe suggest that we didn't win our battles as much as we have done. I don't feel like there was any real high profile errors that caused a goal. Obviously the pass out on their first one, but that was an inch away from being a really good pass to then get us on the counter attack. So I don't mind. Was it Sorensen? I think it was either ball to Sorensen or from Sorensen.
Monsma to Sorensen.
It was literally an inch away from being into his feet, into his path, and he was away for a counter attack, which what made it really real shame. I don't think there was any glaring errors. Like their second goal was Jacko's done everything he possibly can to get a block in, and it's just an unlucky deflection. Posh dominated the game in the boxes, and they deserved the win. But the 3-0 does flatter them, and the 3-0 makes the perception of the performance maybe skewed, because I think the performance was more about our inability to attack than it actually was about our inability to defend. We still defended okay, I felt, even though the stats maybe say not quite to the efficiency that we have done at other times this season. I didn't think that was the particular weakness.
No, the absolute weakness was attack. Jack Diamond was the only attacker who had a touch in the box. I think the only other one was Matty Virtue and Lewis Monsma. Ben House didn't have a touch in the box, according to the stats, and neither did Danny Mandrew. And that's not good enough. House, I think early doors, the wingers were far too far away from House, so House was massively isolated. And when we went to two up top, it changed a little bit. Luke Plange actually, again, doesn't get great ratings because he's a striker and he came on and he didn't score. But over the course of 90 minutes, he would have averaged 4.35 successful attacking actions, which I think equates to about 3, I think, overall, which is more than any player who started the game. So actually, I thought Plange gave us a certain energy. And from the shape change up to their second goal, right, and people do. I've been met with people taking a mick out of me for this. I genuinely believed we could still have got a point, even though we weren't playing well.
I agree with you.
I still felt, I felt that Plange and House together looked relatively good, but the attackers didn't turn up. Jack Diamond didn't turn up. Danny Mandrew didn't turn up. Ben House really struggled. Losing Ethan Arahan and putting on Ted Bishop, Ted Bishop came on, didn't he, for Matty Virtue, I think it was. But there was no cohesion. Losing Matty Virtue, he was he's about one of our best players. He's had two shots. He's put more crosses in than Jack Diamond and Danny Mandrew combined.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting,
because
isn't
he's
it?
Put one in.
It's interesting because the shape change, like, no one wants to lose Ethan Arahan. He's one of our best players. Obviously, we've spoken about him a hell of a lot since we've signed him, and I'm sure we'll continue to in the coming weeks. So it'll be a shame to miss him. But tactically, our system was just getting played through. Like and Mark Kennedy made a point of this actually in his press conference either this week, I think. He mentioned about that we struggle to press against the back four, which is understandable because they have an overload. It's more difficult to press against the back four than a back three when you've got a front three. And when we changed the shape, it was more of a man-for-man press. So we didn't do it aggressively at all, but just pure mathematics suggests that they haven't got a spare player anymore for an easy pass. So we improved just by preventing them the openings to play through us, which they had in the early stages. And I agree with you. I don't think we were free-flowing. I don't feel that we were dominating the game or creating a huge amount, but I felt like we was in it and I felt like we had a chance. But like we said earlier, as soon as that second goal went in, it was game over.
Now, I hadn't thought about this, and it's quite clear now. I've just looked at the formation. So I've said that I thought we were great from the shape change up to their second goal. Well, not great. I thought we were better from the shape change to their second goal. Actually, we changed our shape 2 minutes before their second goal and went to a flat 4-4-2. So actually, we were better when we were in a 3-5-2.
We changed shape as soon as Irohan went off.
We changed shape when he went off, yeah.
To a 4-2-3-1 or 4.
To a, well, you call it what you
kind
want.
Of.
I mean, it's
a
3-5.
House played in the 2, in the 10.
Yeah, they're putting it effectively as a 3-5-2. So they're saying that we went almost with two up top. But
I don't think that's correct. I think we went to a back four at that point.
When Virtue went off, that was when they say we went to a flat back four. And Sorensen went into the midfield with Bishop, Mandrew and Diamond on the flanks, House and Flange.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, you're absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. We went 3-5-2 first.
So,
because we were all surprised that Flange is coming on for Irohan.
Yeah. And actually, remember that now. My point would be, I think 3-5-2 is the way forward. I don't think people talk about three at the back. Three at the back ain't the problem. The problem is at the minute that we're trying to play two fullbacks and two wingers, and we're getting no penetration from either. So you're taking four players out of the game, and then essentially.
Yeah, I'm obviously biased because it's a particular formation that I favour anyway, as you will have noticed on Sunday, which is similar
to
ours.
You had a formation on Sunday. We'll come to that. Carry on.
That's very harsh. but the important thing is the three forwards that play. So you play a back three and you have wing backs. That's obviously the back four, the back three is the deciding point. So if you're going to play a back three, which Mark Kennedy has said he prefers, then it's all about how you structure the rest of it. You obviously need central midfielders in there. So it's whether you have one up top and two wide players, one up top and two really tucked in narrow 10s, or two up top and a 10. And just purely, just my own opinion, this isn't any kind of expert analysis, it's just opinion. You need those three players close together. Because one of two things will happen. One of them will either be unmarked, or it will drag a wide defender in a back four, a left back or a right back, closer to the centre to pick one up, which then creates space on the overlap for your wing-backs to get further forward. If you have a striker up on his own, two wide forwards as wingers, then your wing-backs have got their own play in front of them, so they're naturally going to be deeper, which then creates you playing, even attacking in a back five, and it creates space in front of your midfield, and you end up as like almost like a back seven with a front three. It's difficult to create that way. That's just my opinion, but
it's right.
I feel like at times it's been shown to be correct. But at the same time, we've clearly invested in attacking wide players. We've haven't really had the ability to play two up top. I know we have got Plange, but we haven't got a third striker to do that. You know, you can argue that Mandrew can play up there at times. Diamond can play up there at times, but they're not natural strikers. So I like a 3-5-2, and I think in League One, you play your back three, your wing backs, your two sixes that we currently have, but you position those front three much narrower. A two, and then a ten in behind is ideal, or a striker and two really narrow tens that are quite free. But you then leave the wings open for your wing backs to go and exploit.
So are we saying that the two most important signings that we make this summer actually are not necessarily a centre forward, but they're two proper attacking wing backs? Probably, I pull names out of the hair, like Luke Lee, whatever his name is, Luke Leahy, who was at Bristol Rovers and Shrewsbury, players like that.
Yeah, attacking wing back will help, but I think also it's potentially a system thing, because if you've got someone right, if you're playing right wing back, let's imagine you're Cohen Bramall, who is a very attacking wing back, and he's playing left wing back for us. But there is someone, let's say Jack Diamond, playing left wing in front of him, and his pressing trigger is their right back. So he's going to be wide. Well, then Bramwell's obviously going to be deeper. Whereas if, let's say, you're playing against a back three, and rather than the opposition right wing back be Diamond's pressing trigger, it's actually their right centre back, Bramwell's then going to be pressing on the wing back higher, and he's naturally in a higher position. So I think partly it's system. I'm not saying the system's crap because it's hard to beat, but I think in terms of the attacking output, and I remember that the live pod, Danny Butterfield made a really good point to one of the questions about pressing. I think it was my geeky question. And he says that we don't press just to stop the other team having the ball. We press to try and score. We're trying to press in situations where we can immediately win it back and get a goal and get a shot away, which is a really good answer, a really interesting way of looking at it.
But surely...
You commit more players further forward early on, and in those transition moments, you've got more players forward in those higher areas of the pitch. So, you know, it's football's so fluid, and you know, so it only takes one person to do that wrong, and you get clipped, the ball gets clipped over the top or into midfield, and then you've got five players forward out of the game. So it's high risk. But yeah, that's just my opinion. I like attacking and kind of high risk, high reward football, but that's just me. Yeah.
Well, speaking of attacking, because I think we move on from Peterborough now, because we've done 20 minutes on it and it doesn't warrant it.
yeah, that's fair.
So there's been some chatter this week about potentially Sunderland watching Ben House. Obviously, it's just going to be transfer rumour, but it's not surprising, is it, that he's being watched by teams in the Championship? I mean, he didn't have a great game on Saturday, to be fair to him, but it's certainly never through a lack of endeavour. And I think he's a striker who will never score you 25 goals a season, but might just help create you that many goals a season with his hard work for players around him.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's definitely, maybe this summer, maybe next summer, I think he's Championship bound at some point. Yeah. I think he's certainly shown the qualities. Now, just think of how much he's improved in the time he's been with us in, what, a year and a half? Or just over a year, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's improved massively. And again, Mark Candy's made a point of saying this, like, off the ball, he's one of the best strikers in the league. And, you know, when he's had the opportunity to get in front of the goal, his conversion percentage is pretty high. He hasn't scored loads and loads of goals because we haven't created loads and loads of chances. And if anything, he's often the catalyst to winning the balls back high up the pitch and then laying them off to a teammate. So maybe he would be a 20-goal-a-season striker if he was playing in a team that provided him with a bit more service. But I think there's so many ingredients there for a real competent Championship striker. And I wouldn't begrudge him a move at all, as long as we got, you know, we'd obviously want compensating quite handsomely. And the fact he's got a long deal does protect us in that regard. But I think we've got to credit the recruitment team, because for someone to spot him, it's not like he was, you know, prolific in the National League. It's not like we've gone out and signed Macaulay Langstaff and go, hang on, like, there's a bloke in the National League who scored a million goals. Should we go and have a look at him and see what he's like? Like, everyone notices that. I don't think Ben House scored over 11 goals in the National League.
No,
he
didn't.
But he clearly has some qualities that we're now seeing. And it's just interesting. And it's credit where it's due to pick that up. And, you know, the whole model is about trying to bring players on for cheap, sell them on for a profit, so we can then, over the long term, invest. But I tell you what, be a massive loss to us the pitch.
But do you think that the fact that we've brought House and he's doing relatively well for us now actually bodes well for the future for potentially Charlie Kendall, certainly Dylan Duffy, to a degree Danny Mandrew, who I likened on a dog walk chat to Jeff Hughes a couple of days ago, because obviously when Jeff Hughes came in, with the greatest respect, he was crap for the first 6 to 8 months. He looked like he would blow over. He wasn't amongst the goals or assists. Mm-hmm. You know, there was nothing on him. And then he came out and he was a behemoth the next season, 2006-07, one of our best players. And I think Mandrew potentially could be like that. Dylan Duffy, we haven't seen anything of him to say what he's like. But the fact that Ben House is showing these qualities now that have got people going, he's a good player for us, he doesn't score enough goals, and people will judge him on that, whether it's right or wrong, which we've just said he's wrong, because he's scored goals in big games as well. But people, you know, the Wikipedia warriors go straight on and look at, you know, appearances and goals, don't they? But when you look deeper, this is actually a football player who has got the potential to go much higher. And like you say, just that bodes well for the players that we've got, who at the moment we haven't seen the best of or anything.
That's a really good point. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's so difficult to kind of predict it because you haven't quite seen it yet. But there's been a lot of players that have come into this club, done well and progressed now in the last 2 or 3 years. And there's got to be a reason for that.
There's been a few that haven't, to be fair. Just have,
Of course they have. But no
club have done better.
No club gets them all right. I think the number that have gone on to progress, the amount of players that come into a League One, League Two club, you know, they'll get released from a Premier League academy, or they'll be out of contract at another club. They'll go in, they'll do their 2-year deal. They won't set the world alight. They'll do a job, but they'll get released at the end of it, and they'll go and find another club. That kind of rotation, I suppose, convey about happens all the time, every summer. There's not that many clubs that actually actively, consistently sell players on. A lot of clubs end contracts but get new ones in. So even teams like MK Dons, we said they recruited well this summer. Maybe they lost a few players, obviously. A lot of them on frees. And they recruited well, but they're all on free transfers. And that happens everywhere. So
it didn't. One place it hasn't happened, and we'll... I'm ruining it now, but I'm just going to mess up our... our little list, I'm afraid. But one place that hasn't happened is Fleetwood, because in this winter window, they clearly spent money on Stockley and Marriott, two players who do not have resale value. At the time, I kind of called it as a risk, probably one that's paid off for them in the short term. And this weekend, and to, do you know what, I'm going to kind of bundle it up, I think, with a little point that I made the other day about Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday. And it really wound me up because people were going saying, Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday, this is how football should be played. This is how League One football. I hope Mark Kennedy's watching. This is how you attack. And I'm just sitting there thinking, well, of course it is. They've got £30,000 a week Barry Bannon in midfield. They've got, you know, £8,000, £9,000, £10,000 a week Lee Gregory up front, or James Norwood or Max Waters. And I found it really frustrating because we're not comparing. This was a saying I used to hear in the builders merchant industry. You're not comparing apples with apples. When you're looking at Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday and this is what we should be doing. Yeah, I made the point about, you know, if your missus buys an Astra and you want to get to work quick and it's, you know, it's a 1.6 Astra and you look out the window and look at your neighbour and go, oh, we should have had a Lamborghini. But your neighbour, do you know what I mean? Your neighbour's a millionaire and you're not. Do you know what I mean? And to a degree, I think that goes to Fleetwood. We're not a football club who have got the kind of ownership model where we're going to go, right, well, there's 12, 13 grand a week to spend on Stockley and Marriott, and there's £500,000 to buy them with absolutely no potential for return whatsoever. And they're not going to be in the playoffs next season either. And
You mentioned it was a risk when they signed them, and it's paid off. And I agree with that 100%. Like, but it doesn't mean it wasn't a risk at the time, because they could have failed. They could have really not fitted in, and they could have not had the run they've had. Now you look back at it, you can say results. Everything's in the results. They've been on a great run. It was worth the investment. It's got them away from danger. And you've kind of got to go fair dues, because we kind of did that last season.
To a degree.
Not to the same extent, but we went over budget because we wanted to make sure that we stayed up, and we bought four strikers in or whatever it was in January, you know, some on loan, some permanently, whatever. So we did it to an extent because we were flirting with relegation, just like Fleetwood were. It's paid off for them. But we can't do that every season. Fleetwood at some point won't be able to do that every season because the rules will catch up with them. The owner at some point will not be able to sustain that. It's worked this season as a short-term measure, but yeah, I think comparing Fleetwood, though, to the likes of Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday is different because, again, you're not comparing apples with apples in terms of the overall club. So, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think in regards to Saturday, it'll be a tough game for us for lots of reasons, not just because of those two, though.
Do you know how many goals they've scored between them for Fleetwood?
I don't know. I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Have a guess.
Six?
Two. They scored one each.
So it's interesting then to think what has their impact been, because we've just been saying about Ben House, though, about he doesn't score that many goals, but what an impact he has to the team. So we can't then go look at the other way and say, oh, they haven't scored anything, so they haven't been worthwhile. But it's interesting to see that how much of the impact has been because they've just been in and around the team, and how much of it has been because fortunes changed, tactics have changed. We don't know, do we? We know we're not Fleetwood fans as much as we try and do a bit of research to predict to look ahead of the games. We don't know as anywhere near as much about Fleetwood as we do about Lincoln, and we never will. No. So it's difficult to know.
So, but do you know who does know quite a bit about Fleetwood? His name is Ben.
Go on. I reckon I know who it might be.
His name is Ben Nappers, and shock horror, Ben Nappers has been, well, Ben Naplin, I think, but we know him as Nappers. He has been talking to Charlie Beeston. He's one of our boys, and you can hear that straight after a word from our sponsors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. Mmm. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview for Fleetwood Town away on Saturday. I'm joined by Ben Nappers from Cods Vlogs. Hi, Ben.
Hello, mate. Good to see you and good to be speaking about the game on Saturday.
You too, mate. Right, so how's the season been?
Yeah, it's been up and down. Obviously, Scott Brown's first season as a manager. Obviously, had a couple of good results, a couple of bad results, a couple of okay results. Obviously, on Saturday, everyone's high after beating Derby County away. You know, probably the biggest result in the football club's history.
Yeah, great result.
Up there with Sheffield United away, and it was a superb result, and we need more of them. But it's against the sides like yourselves that, you know, you maybe should look into, you know, do better against, play better against, you know, test. We haven't quite been up to scratch against in terms of performances. So there's a long way to go, but, you know, we're on the right track and we're making progress. For every negative you can mention about Fleetwood, you can probably name two positives.
Just listening to that, it sounds like we are both, so, you know, Lincoln and Fleetwood in very similar situations at the minute. I mean, we ourselves can get some great results against the top teams, but then struggle against those towards the bottom. And, just looking at the baseline stats when I was checking it out earlier on, we seem very similar. We've got similar amounts of wins and losses. Obviously, I know we've got a few more draws, but you're second in the draw table of the league. And, goals for and against, we are quite similar. So it does seem like it's going to be one of those games of two teams, you know, that on paper you might expect to get a draw. But what do you think looking forward to the game on Saturday? Are you expecting it to be sort of a very even game, or?
Yeah, very cagey. Both teams that, you know, probably want the end of the season sooner rather than later, so you can dust it off, have a little break, and we can go again next season. Your story, your season is too many draws, especially at home against, you know, your Exeters, your Forest Greens, your Fleetwoods, MK Dons, Accrington. There's five draws in there that you probably should have won the game. You didn't. You had those 10 points and you're chasing the playoffs and you're still within a shot of your season being alive. So that's the difference between us, like as kind of Fleetwood and your Lincolns, to your Boltons, your Peterboroughs, your Wickhams, your Derbys, your Barnsleys, you know, those types of sides that can pull off wins, you know, when they're not at the best. So it's going to be a real even game. Both teams, are decent teams on the day. Both teams have new managers. So it's going to be an interesting battle, I think. Obviously, you've got a couple out with internationals, one being Rushworth as well, which I think is a massive blow and probably adds to our chances of winning the game.
Yeah, it's I was very much going to ask you, What's your international call-up situation like? Because I haven't seen from yourself. So are you expecting to be missing any or many first-teamers?
Q&As, that's it really. Ireland, a lot of others are mainly kind of under-19s, academy, born bred. So yeah, I think we'll be more than fine for Saturday. We've got pretty much a fully fit squad bar. A couple of players promised is a long-term injury. Darnell Johnson's been out for ages, Danny Andrew. So we've got a decent squad to choose from, lots of options. And going into the last kind of 8-9 games of the season, it should be an interesting one.
Yeah, not really what I want to hear, but, fair enough. So looking at sort of specifically looking at you guys for the game on Saturday, what kind of shape have you been running? What do we need to be worried about? What are we expecting?
It's been even a back three or a back four, whoever we play against. It was on, I think the other day it was kind of like a 3-4-1-2 kind of situation where we have Marriott, Stockley and Mendes, Gomez all as a front three. And then you have your wing backs and you have your midfield very compact and you have your defence, you know, very tightly knitted as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how we set up, because to play Derby away, to play Lincoln at home is a totally different game.
Yeah.
And this is where Scott Brown's probably not got it as right as he should do. And this is where he's got a lot to learn from. But if he can crack this, which I believe he will, actually, I don't believe he will. I know he will. I know he will. And we'll get there. You know, it might take time, and he will be a decent manager, wherever that may be. And if you can crack that, then Fleetwood Town will go from a mid-table 11 wins, 13 draws, 13 defeats team to a team that are winning on a regular basis.
You know, hopefully for your sake, that, you know, that does happen. Obviously, you mentioned a few of the lads there, sort of Marriott and co, that came in January. What's their impact been? Has it been as much as what you'd hoped?
Yeah, Marriott obviously has struggled for goals. So Stockley, they've only got one each. Stockley had his goal taken off him the other day. But, you know, Stockley was outstanding on Saturday to a man, and Marriott has worked hard. So the goals will come for them too if they keep, you know, working hard. And obviously, we bed them in now, and, you know, they're going to be massive for us next season. We spent a chunk of money on both of them to get them in on bigger deals. And, you know, that was our hope. So we've got to improve our midfield service to them. It's not just them, because strikers need good service in League One. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can do that in the summer.
Well, you know, it's very much what I say. Yeah, for me, I think Ben House for us is a brilliant striker, but sometimes service can be a bit lacking, and, you know, with a little bit extra, then he might just be getting a couple more goals. So looking at Lincoln, obviously you have a great knowledge of the whole of League One. I'm sure you've got it about Lincoln as well. So who are you sort of worried about facing? Who stands out on the team sheet?
A lot of players. Like, you've got, you know, I look at your side at the start of the year, and I've said to a lot of people that it is a solid League One side. Mm. Obviously, I know you've got injuries, and I know you're missing players, but your Rushworths, your Regan Pools, your Diamonds, your Ben Houses, you recruited really well in the kind of the summer area as well, and that's kind of given you a platform. Unfortunately for you, you're the type of side that can go and score six away at Bristol Rovers, but then you won't score for two or three games, and that's your issue is. And you've got great players at the top area of the pitch, but sometimes, you know, they'll have their off days as well. They're either kind of a 9 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10. Mm. They don't consistently get your 7s, your 8s out of 10s like your teams at the top area, and that is service again. So you've got a good side. You know, it's going to be a real tight game. Your home form this season's been good. Your away form's been up and down as well. But you've gone away to some big team this year and given them games. You played Southampton, didn't you? You know, you went toe-to-toe with them.
We'd have beaten Southampton if we had VAR. I'm dying on that hit.
Yeah, you beat Bristol City as well, did you, as well? You know, so, you know, you beat Ipswich away from home. So you can go to these sides and put on a show. And, you know, you are a decent side. But I believe if Lincoln had a Brennan Johnson or a Scully in the side, they'd be in the top 10 and probably would have turned, what is it, 18 draws now this season for you. You probably would have maybe lost three, but you would have won six.
Yeah.
So you probably would be 12 points better off. And you look at that 12 points, all of a sudden, you're not too far off the playoffs. So you just need more match winners, and you need a kind of a start. At the moment, you've gone and have got three or four players that chip in and do well and can get you probably 10 goals a season. You're just missing that kind of 15, 20 goal a season striker. Unfortunately, though, for you, mate, 23 other teams in League One are looking for that. 24 teams in the Championship are looking for that. And 24 teams in League Two are looking for that exact same thing.
Nah, they just don't exist anymore. There's only about two or three of them in the whole 92 anymore, isn't there?
Pretty much, yeah.
They're just not the done thing.
And then when they come to your club, they don't get 20 goals. They get five goals and flop.
Always the case. I mean, you know, I don't need to mention John Marcus coming to us last season, for example. It's those things happen. But I guess the big question finally to finish it all off, score prediction, what are you saying?
I think it'd be 0-0. We both love a draw, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
Tightly contested, you know, display. I think both managers love a clean sheet as well. You know, love kind of being hard to beat, hard to break down, and they kind of take that on the journey with them as well. So I think it'll be two teams that I believe, if you did a 11 lineup, it'd be probably five players from one and six players from the other that would squeeze in, and both kind of in every position have a similar matchup. So it's, you know, it's very interesting. So it's going to be very tight, 0-0. I'd take a point. I'd like to see a few goals, but both kind of teams should see the game as an opportunity to give players a chance. Obviously, you have to because of injuries and suspensions and obviously internationals. And just see the game as, look, we've got nothing to lose now. You probably need another win. We got that last week. I think you've got a game in hand on us to get that as well. So, you know, big opportunity for both teams. But, you know, I'm sure we'll be speaking next season as well.
I don't see that not being the case, I've got to be honest. I'm going for a 2-1 away win. Slightly optimistic, probably.
I was liking you until then. Liking you.
Yeah, well, I've got to go for it, Anna. I can't exactly come on here and say that we're going to lose. And I think all this hype around us getting the record for the number of draws in a season, I just don't think we're going to get another one now, between now and the end of the season.
How many do you need?
I think we need another 5.
Ooh.
So I don't think it'll happen now, but I think a few games back it was very much on the cards. So
maybe, you never know.
Well, like you say, I'm sure we will be speaking next season. So thanks very much for that, Ben. And enjoy the rest of your season now that, like you say, you are basically safe. So
you too, mate. Thanks for having me on. And
enjoy the game on Saturday.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
Brilliant. Thank you, Nappers. Thank you, Charlie. Now, we're a little bit of a disadvantage thanks to a scheduling error. We haven't been able to listen to that because as we talk, it hasn't actually been recorded. So we don't know.
We have no idea what was said, but I'm sure it was very insightful.
Yeah. So we're going to make ourselves look like knobs now because we're going to talk about the game a little bit. Now, I'm concerned. I don't know what Nappers has just said. I'm a little bit concerned. I'm concerned because of Stockley and Marriott, who have only scored 2 goals collectively in what is probably like 15 or 16 or 20 games. I'm worried because we don't have Paddy O'Connor, who I've already said didn't have a great game on Saturday. I'm worried because we don't have Sean Rowan, who has been solid nearly all season. I'm very worried because we don't have Carl Rushworth, which is ridiculous because Jordan Wright is a great shot stopper. But I'm just a little bit concerned about this game. I actually think that it could be the third of 4 consecutive defeats for us. And I know that that will have people up in arms. But a run like this has been coming. And a run like a couple of wins might actually come after it. Because whenever we seem to go on a run and whenever negative things seem to happen, Mark Kennedy reacts to it. But I'm just, I'm a little bit concerned about this weekend.
I echo your concerns. If you was hoping for me to come on and say, no, Gary, it's going to be fine because X, Y, Z. It's not happening. I'm concerned for the same reasons that you're concerned. And just the fact that being hard to beat, well, we weren't. It's the first time this season that we didn't have, you know, we've discussed the home record. Obviously, it's over now, but we've discussed the home record at length over the season. And depending on whether you were glass half full, glass half empty, it was either a positive or not so much of one. But it's gone now. And for those of us that were glass half full, I think both of us were, we haven't got that in the back of our mind saying, yeah, but look how hard we are to beat. We're unbeaten at home all season. That's how hard we are to beat. People can't break us down. We lost 3-0. And like we said, maybe that flattered them a little bit, but we still did. And just from a mentality perspective from the players, losing something as positive as that in the camp is going to have an impact. And you're going to, and other players on the pitch looking around thinking, bloody hell, we haven't got Carl in goal at the moment. Even though that Jordan is absolutely reliable, Carl Rushworth has been an outstanding goalkeeper for this season. Paddy O'Connor has been Mr. Reliable all season. Sean Rowan has been really mature in his defensive performances for the majority of the season. So you're looking around as a player again, bloody hell, there. That's 3 of our key defensive players that aren't in the team right now. We've been struggling to score. Fleetwood have been really hard to beat. In their last 10 games, there's been a lot of 1-0s, a lot of results. There's been a 0-0 in there. There's been a couple of 2-1s. They're not high-scoring games, but they've been coming out on the right side of a lot of those high-scoring, those low-scoring games. Sorry, we have at times this season. We've also got a lot of draws, but I just fear we're going to come out on the wrong side of a low-scoring game on Saturday.
I think so. They bullied us at our place. We were 2-0 up. They were poor. But they bullied us. Sean Rooney, is it Sean Rooney? Came on.
The right back.
Absolute monster.
Josh Earle, I think that they've got, who was at Ipswich, who I think has been relatively impressive for them. We talk about Marriott and Stockley, and they're the ones that are going to get all the headlines. But Josh Vaylor was at Shrewsbury, wasn't he, and did the whole contract thing. They are a team who I think are built in the image of their manager. I think they're tough. I think they're niggly. I think the Bristol Rovers, Mark, too. You know, that's my perception of them, whether that's factual or not.
I remember the discussion we had after the home game, walking away from the ground, and that's, like I said, exactly the same thing. They're a team in the image of their manager, and it was different to last season, whereas sometimes you can feel an equaliser coming or conceding a late goal come in. I didn't feel the same because I felt we'd been a bit more solid. We're obviously a lot more solid overall now than we were when we played them before. But that was more a case of, that was just percentages. So they didn't create many high quality chances, but they just locked the ball in the box a lot. Yeah. And if you get the ball in the area so often and you get shots away, even if they're just half chances so often, just probability suggests that one's going to go in. And then that happened against us in the early game of the season, and we came away with a point that we should have won. I think both teams have probably improved since then, but I think mentally we might be a little bit more susceptible than they are at the moment, especially after last week and especially with the lads that are missing.
What's really interesting, you look at their game against Peterborough, their XG was 0.33, so around the same as ours. Peterborough's was 0.95, so around the same as ours. So the balance of that game was very, very similar to the balance of our game. They beat Peterborough 1-0. And they only had 5 shots with 1 on target, which was fewer than us. You know, you look at their game
I suppose their 1 on target probably wasn't an overhead kick by a centre-back, though.
No, probably not. Probably not. But you look at Fleetwood and Port Vale, 15 shots from Fleetwood, 5 on target. But they conceded 14, 3 on target. They were very lucky, beat Derby 2-0, 9-3, 14-1. I think if we were at full strength, and I could easily debate what full strength actually looks like for us, I think we'd stand a chance. I think it would be more of a draw. I think between now and the end of the season, we just need to get over the line, because attacking-wise, something's not right. We talked about, what was it, Exeter, when somebody said before the Exeter game, that's more or less us full strength. But it was Diamond and Mandrew, and now I'm thinking, well, you know, Vernon and Shadipo surely couldn't be any kind of worse than those two at the minute because of the form that they're in. I just think that we're falling out of form, and I think the season's going to tail off.
That's my concern. And I think it was only a few weeks ago that every game really matters. And we got ourselves up to 11th. Was after the Oxford game, wasn't it? And we was flying. Maybe we didn't deserve to win it, but we did win it. And we were flying, and we was like, yeah, we're in a good form at the moment. We're in a good run. We were never going to get to the playoffs. Never in a million years. Unless something goes catastrophically wrong, we're also not going to get relegated. At that point, I kind of felt like that was foot off the gas just a tad. Not necessarily in the camp, maybe as a fan base.
Yeah.
Just think, we're all right now. Any of us that were slightly concerned about relegation aren't anymore, or shouldn't be. So we're fine. And, you know, there's been the complaints, or not complaints, but some suggestions that maybe the away support has been a little bit quieter. There's been, you know, and maybe the performances haven't...
That was controversial, but go on.
But it was mentioned it last week, didn't we?
What I'm saying is we mentioned it last week and it was quite controversial.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree, but it was mentioned. Yeah. And maybe that's just, it's just, no, I got that same feeling. I think, relax a bit now, we're okay. And when Posh scored on Saturday, I wasn't massively gutted. Obviously, I didn't want them to, and I still at that time thought we could get into it. When the second went in, it wasn't pure anger that, we've been shit, you know, I'm going to leave now. It was just, bugger. That's the run over. That's us. That's that kind of wave of positivity kind of is properly gone, especially after the Exeter game. And the only concern I've got is that we just coast now towards the end of the season. We go on a bad run, pick up a point here and there to mean that we never seriously still get dragged into it. But we go towards the end of the season, only winning 2 or 3 more games. And then we don't have a huge positivity going into the summer. Whereas what I'd love is if we can just keep chipping away between now and then, and we finish the season on a positive run, then you can go into the recruitment drive in the summer. You can go into next season with a real positivity. And that's the only concern I've got. And I agree. Last week, Exeter, Posh, this Saturday and the next game, could be a real challenge in four games. And then my concern isn't the results of those actual four games. It's more about how they then affect the run into the end of the season.
If we are to lose Fleetwood and Sheffield Wednesday, would there then still be a little bit of squeaky bum looking down?
Well, we all know what happened in 2011, so yeah.
Exactly.
But I feel there's such a separation. Like taking the Lincoln City head off it and thinking, well, we got stung before by having this mentality. Just being more objective than that from the outside looking in. Not anybody is going to look at Lincoln City, even if we lose these four games, thinking, yeah, they're going to be in serious threat of relegation. There are so many worse teams in the league, and the points per game that the teams down there are achieving are really low compared to what you'd expect. So there has been, I think, once ever someone's gone down on 50 points in League One. None of the
51,
back,
I think 51. Yeah.
Yes, none of the bottom four this season will go down on 50 points. They'll be nowhere near it, in my opinion, nowhere near it. So I don't think we're seriously in threat of that. But it'd be nice to be mathematically safe, wouldn't it? So then you just know full well it's not a problem. I don't think it is. I think if we just coast the end of the season, we'll pick up enough points to stay up.
It's interesting, actually. We've been there before. They are low points, tally. I mean, Accrington on 37, so they've got 9 games left. To catch us, they would need to win 4 of those 9 games, assuming we picked up no points at all. If we are to pick up even just 5 points from our next 10 games, which would be a disastrous haul, Accrington would then need to win 5 of their last 9 when they've only won 8 of the last 37. Morecambe have played one more and have got one fewer point. And then Cambridge are already 15 points behind us. So they would have to basically in 9 games again, pick up 5 wins.
Well, this is the consequence of the kind of the split in the league. It's almost two leagues. And we've said this all season. And we got ourselves when we was in 11th to the top of that, of our mini league. And then all the clubs above us were those bigger clubs with bigger budgets that expected, almost all of them, expected to be up there. And they've all picked up a far higher number of points than you normally would do at this stage. So think of the top three, you've got ridiculous points totals. There's not many teams, certainly, that are clustered together that far. But that means that they've got the points that some of the teams that at the lower end of the table historically may have nicked.
Yeah.
So there's a big kind of gap there, which means that that normal 51, 52 points that gets you safe, I just don't think you need that many this year.
No, you didn't last year. Didn't Fleetwood stay up last year on something like 42?
Yeah, something I can't remember.
I think...
As soon as we were safe, I couldn't pay attention to it.
Think we'll end up on 52 or 53 points. I think that Accrington will probably be the last team relegated on about 47.
The concern I had, as you mentioned, though, is if we do go on a horrific run and only pick up 5 points out the next 10 games... And that is a bad run. That will take us into next season on a bit of a low without any momentum at all. Like, we're absolutely fine. We're nowhere near relegation, but it's still a negative mentality to take in. And that's what I really want to avoid.
But it's a negative mentality, but you can negate that by making the right signings.
Oh, of course you can.
And I think
you just like to give yourself the best chance of having a successful pre-season, a good recruitment drive. If you've been a team that's won 5 of the last 10 games, for example, and you finish a season strongly and you've had an upward trajectory since January, it's a lot more enticing as a player than if you've struggled and you were just dropping off it.
It goes
into that from both the club's perspective and the player's perspective. They don't just look at the last 10 games and see, oh, they did all right, I'll go there. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But why not just put the odds in your favour? I think that's the only
thing. I buy that. I remember Steve Thompson as manager in 91, 92, and I think he won his last 7 or 8 games. Loads of momentum. Everybody then was tipping us to be higher up the table than perhaps we should have been. And we ended up finishing just outside the playoffs. And, you know, there's also a case of raising expectations too high as well. I don't want us to win our games, but
I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, to be honest. That's a nice little leveler for me. Thanks.
You know what? A lot of our supporters are like, if we win our next 7 games, it would be, you know, Lincoln, we're going to win the league. So
If anyone does that, it obviously increases expectations for
the
next season.
It's not me. I'm an eternal pessimist. So, right, we're on 51 minutes plus whatever Ben and whatever Nappers and Charlie.
Charlie.
Yeah. Ow. Fuck, I've just stabbed myself with a pen. So we better get through the other things very, very quickly. So first of all, just mention Willie Bell. So Willie Bell, former Lincoln City manager, passed away this week. Not remembered fondly for his time at Lincoln City, unfortunately. I think came in and ended up leaving us in dire relegation trouble. So it didn't work out for him here, but obviously he's had a long and distinguished coaching career over in America since then. So obviously our condolences are with his family, absolutely. Fan engagement, let's touch on this really quick. So once again, we've come quite a way up the fan engagement list this season. Interesting to see our governance was only a couple of points higher than Scunthorpe United, which was amusing.
That's
given
how baffling.
Yeah, utterly baffling. But once again, you know, we're a club off the field who others perceive to be doing things the right way.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we finished fifth, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Out of the whole 70. Is it 92 or 72? I think it's the whole 92, isn't it?
Well, if Scunthorpe are on it, it's got to be more than that, isn't it?
Oh, good point. Yeah. Oh, good, very good point. The top two are fan-owned clubs, which will always come top in those sort of situations. So realistically, you take Exeter and AFC Wimbledon out of the equation because they're always going to be top two. And fair play to them. Obviously, we all like what they're doing. Then we're third out of everyone else. Brilliant. It's just brilliant. Fair play.
Yeah, it is.
We've said it countless times, and I'm sure we'll continue to. Whatever happens on the pitch, we can discuss and debate for hours on end. But one thing that isn't in doubt is the safe hands that the club is in off the pitch. And it's just really nice to have that. I often listen to the Price of Football podcast, listening to it today, and they're discussing Wigan. Like, Wigan's what a baffling case
started.
That is. Yeah, so they was in those real deep financial issues, and we all had real sympathy for them. And, two or three years ago.
Yeah.
Liam Richardson obviously did a great job to keeping them up, got them promoted, obviously with a bit of backing. So they got taken over, got some backing, spent a lot of money. They lost £7 million getting out of League One. £7 million they lost getting out of this league. Have gone up, aren't paying wages in the Championship, may well end up in administration again and receive another points deduction. Like chasing the quick wins just is not sustainable and doesn't work. And Wigan fans must now just, you know, imagine that. All we want to talk about is debate how shit you are or how brilliant you are on a Saturday on the pitch. But what's in your mind all the time is what's going on behind the scenes. And that's all they're talking about. What's on the pitch is secondary. For us, we get the privilege of discussing at length what happens on the pitch because what happens off it is a given. And that's a privilege to have.
I didn't hear one of those Wigan fans complaining when they were busting the bank to get out of our division last season. And that's, I'm not calling out a whole group of other fans because I'm sure there will be the odd one, but that's what really gets my goat is they're always happy to celebrate the promotions and not ask where the money's coming from. Bury fans, to a degree, not all Bury fans, were more than happy a couple of years ago to when Ryan Lowe was there and they were spending on the likes of Danny Mayer and people like that. And not so much Bury, certainly, but Wigan were there and they came back through and it's not the fans' fault, I get it. They're an absolute example of what is wrong with football. And
yeah,
how
I have to agree with that. I suppose the one thing to say is that from a fan's perspective, you've had a terrible situation with an ownership. You've been in administration. You've almost got relegated out of League Two. Well, you almost went out of business. Then almost got relegated to League Two. Someone comes in and the immediate thought is new is better, isn't it? Whereas actually new is just different. And I suppose, yes, they're investing heavily, but you don't know how sustainable that is as a fan. And you get brought along with the success, I'm sure. Yeah, maybe there were some questions about it at the time, but they were paying the wages last year. Yes, they were investing, but they invested in what seems like a way that was going to be successful for them. Only this season, when you realise, hang on, they haven't been paid for half of the season. What's going on here? You realise, shit, new wasn't necessarily better. We're back in the same situation we were before. So you're absolutely right. As fans, we'll always, you know, maybe turn a blind eye to some things. But also, at the time, it wasn't as clear as it is now what was going on. So I think it's worth mentioning that. But from a Lincoln City perspective, we haven't got to worry about any of that. We're fine.
All right. We're all right, Jack. But I think we can find, all I say is they are a shining example of why we need some sort of regulation and wage cap and spending 100%. Monitor.
100%.
Yeah, and bear in mind, aside from Peterborough, they were the last team to beat us at Sintel Bank, and they did that on the back of a £7 million loss. And when our fans are going, well, we should sign Stockley and Marriott, or we should sign Josh McGuinness, or we should sign... That's what happens. If you want to go for broke, you'll end up being a Wigan, or a Bury, or a Coventry, or a Portsmouth, or anybody else. Huddersfield, Reading are in trouble. I don't want to be those teams. I'd rather be mid-table in League One than dicing with death financially. And if that makes me
That, I think that's reasonable for everybody, isn't it?
But if you're pushing
for promotion, you turn a blind eye to it, or some people would turn a blind eye to it.
In the transfer window, when Stockley and Marriott signed for Fleetwood, a lot of people were saying we should get the checkbook out. And it's that attitude that gets football clubs into Wigan's position, Huddersfield's position, Reading's position.
That's a good
position.
Point. Yeah. I would have been furious if we did. If we got the checkbook out and we'd gone, right, let's spend £500,000 on some strikers along similar ilk of those with the wages that they'll command. You know what? It's not massively dissimilar to Marquis. I think that was a budget version of those two last season.
It's massively different.
We didn't invest the transfer fee, and it was only a short-term deal.
And it was a short-term deal.
But the point I'm making is that's the extent that we will go to.
Yeah, yeah. But so if we needed to do something like that, we did it. But the point with Marquis is that it was done in a managed way that didn't threaten the future of the club.
I hope it doesn't happen.
If Andy Pilley dropped dead tomorrow, or if Andy Pilley suddenly had a change of heart and walked away from Fleetwood, with the commitments that they have and the fans that they get, they'd be bust in 18 months.
They'd go out of business and they'd reform back in the Northwest Counties League.
Yep, and they'd be like Rushden and Diamonds. And there are too many clubs like that. There should be no clubs that are so entirely reliant on one person that if that person walked away, they would fold. They're the risk clubs, because for everything that Fleetwood spend and for every Forest Green were offering more money to Ethan Arahan, they were offering more money to St Mirren to buy him, based on what? You shouldn't be judged purely on your attendances. But I think I said it the other day, you cannot have these sorts of football clubs running completely unsustainably. And Wigan last season in a division where you've then got a big gaggle of clubs trying to do it sustainably. Because you see it now, we're going, oh, well, Lincoln, we should be buying the players that Barnsley are getting or Sheffield Wednesday are getting because they're at the top of the table and they play great football. And it's not realistic. You have 24 teams who are separated by 10, 15, 20, 30 points, but they're so far apart in everything else. It's unreal. It just angers me. Right. Should we talk about another team that did particularly well this weekend, just to wrap up?
We had some good news.
Tell us about it, Chris.
Good news. So you may have noticed last week on the podcast, I plugged a particular football match that was going on Sunday. It was a cup semi-final for my team, Rugby. And we only went and won it in the, about 2 or 3 minutes before the end of extra time.
Made hard work of it.
We did, yeah. I'll be honest, broadly, we're really organised. Personally, I felt we dominated large sections of it, but we just couldn't find the final ball. And then we finally got over the line. And, it was what a feeling. I haven't experienced a feeling like that in a game I've been involved in for such a long time. And it was an absolute pleasure. And we had loads of people come to support us. Thank you for advertising it on Twitter, on your page, because I'm sure that had a big impact on that. And it was just brilliant. I loved every second of it. And it was just, we've got a cup final to look forward to. This football club's not won a competition for a long time, haven't been to a cup final for a long time. On a personal note, I've never won anything. Obviously, we've got a game to play and win it yet, but we've got a chance, and it was just brilliant. It was actually an absolutely brilliant day.
And well, we'll see. See, when we say made hard work of it, you obviously went 1-0 down to a good goal. It was a good finish. Probably, it could have been avoided, but it was a good finish. Got yourself back into it. Got a last-minute penalty.
Missed it. Matt, who missed it, that's the first penalty he's ever missed in his whole life. All the way through kids' football, all the way through adult football. It's the first one he's ever missed.
It was a good penalty, apart from the fact it didn't go in. It was low. It was as far away from the keeper as it could be. I could see what he was trying to do. But the Broadley keeper was superb. And then, obviously, a minute from the end of extra time, you get another penalty. And missed it.
Different penalty taker. Young Brendan, who was our top goal scorer this season, takes it. Keeper makes a great save, but thankfully he follows it in pandemonium. And then we just see it the last couple of minutes. But
do you know what? I thought Brendan as well, just he kept his cool. In that one moment, he had to be really aware. And as he was walking, I mean, it was the moment, because I got the camera pointing at it. And what happened when you guys got the penalty, by the way, everybody cheered like you'd scored a goal. And on the second one, I got quite angry. I actually shouted up the line, "Why are you cheering? You haven't scored it." Yeah.
Well, someone took a video, and I've got it. You've got it.
Oh, you're joking.
And then obviously everyone goes nuts and runs on the pitch. It was fantastic. I just want to say thank you to everyone that came to support, everyone that said congratulations and has messaged me personally or on the club page. it genuinely is appreciated. It really made the day special for me personally, but also for all the lads, because it's been a long time coming. We've had a few tough years, so yeah, it's great. We've got a big day out to look forward to. We haven't got a date for the final yet. I'll absolutely advertise it on here. I'll plug the hell out of it, because it'd be great to get a real big crowd at Sinsel Bank supporting local football. So I'll obviously kind of advertise that in due course. But yeah, it was a great day.
I've already been asked. I've already been asked by some people when the final is.
No, cool. Well, as soon as we know, we'll let you know. Yeah. But yeah, it was a great day. And after the disappointment of Saturday with Lincoln, it was just really nice to end the weekend on a massive high like that. And it really did. It was like a shot of dopamine to the arm. It was amazing. So yeah, more of those sort of games, please.
Even I enjoyed it. As I was coming away, I was singing songs in my head. I was making rugby songs in my head. And I was thinking, like,
well, you posted a couple on Twitter before kickoff. It was great.
I did. Yeah. I get right into it. My second team are, well, I mean, you know, they're the only team that I've actually played for ever. I mean, I know it was one game. So, rugby are in my heart as well. So, anyway, I think that's pretty much it. So, we've covered more or less everything. We're probably a little bit over an hour and 15, depending on Nappers and Charlie.
What a surprise.
Yeah, what a surprise indeed. So we will be back next week. I'm not sure who it will be. Probably me and Ben. Hopefully talking about a positive result against Fleetwood and looking ahead to a massive, massive game against Sheffield Wednesday. In the meantime, hope you all have a very good weekend, and up the Imps.
Up the Imps.
It's the 90th minute and all your mates around watching the Imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.